Hello, everyone. This is a new series entitled The History of Our People from the Second Temple to the Second Millennium. And in the first class, we will discuss the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash and the first exile. We essentially will begin this series from when Tanakh leaves off. So the first Beis Hamikdash is built around the 10th century BCE by King Shlomo, and it was destroyed around the year 586 BCE by the kingdom of Babel, Babylonia. At that time, the kingdom of Judea, Malchus Yehuda, was allied with Egypt, and Egypt protected Judea, but under pressure from the Babylonians, Egypt retreated and Jerusalem was left defenseless. This was a time when false prophets had promised deliverance by the Egyptians, but they were wrong. And in the summer of 586 BCE, the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. As many of us know, during the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, there were two kingdoms. There was the Malchus Yisrael, which was the larger northern Israel, and Malchus Yehuda, smaller southern Israel, made up of two tribes, Yehuda and Binyamin. And the kingdom split after Shlomo HaMelech's reign, King Shlomo's reign. The next king was Rechavam, and during his reign, the king split into two. Now, Malchus Yisrael, the northern kingdom, was conquered, and the inhabitants were exiled among the nations around in the 720s BCE by the Assyrians. In Malachim Beis, Perek Yud Zayin, there the Navi describes what happens and describes how Hoshea ben Elah was the ruler in Shomron, which was the capital of the north. He ruled for about 9 years, and the Navi tells us in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Gimel, Alav Allah Shalmaneser Melech Ashur, Shalmaneser, the king of Ashur, goes up and first becomes essentially the leader, essentially Hoshea becomes an Eved, a slave, a vassal state to Shalmaneser, but then eventually Hoshea tries to no longer pay taxes to Ashur. Hoshea seeks the help of So Melech Mitzrayim and wants to ally with Melech Mitzrayim, but it does not work. Eventually, in the ninth year of Hoshea's reign, so the king of Ashur exiles Yisrael to Ashur, and and that's why all these tribes, we refer to them as the 10 lost tribes. So this refers to the tribes from the northern kingdom that were exiled in the 720s before the Common Era, and we essentially don't hear from them again. At some point during Jewish history, at different times, different travelers say they've been to a certain place, so they found some people who claims descent from the northern kingdom. And that may be true, that may not be true. We'll discuss it in future classes. But as of now, again, 720s BCE, we don't hear from these lost tribes after they are exiled by the king of Ashur. And what he does is, in Perek Yudzayin Pasuchav Dalet, the Navi tells us that the king of Ashur brings from Babel and from Kutan, from Ava, from Hamas, from Sfar Vayim, and he brings non-Jews to live in the Shomron. And to live, so what he does is population exchange. He kicks out the Jews and he brings in these foreigners, and the rest of the chapter describes how these foreigners are attacked by lions, until they believe in or they worship God in some form. And there's a discussion in Chazal as to how we view descendants of this group. Are they're called Kutim? Are they Gerei Arayos? Are they really converts who just converted because of the fear of lions and they're really treated as non-Jews? Or are they viewed as Gerei Emes? Are they considered real converts? But the original members of Malchus Yisrael from the northern kingdom, we don't hear from them again. And again, this happened about 140 years before the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. The term Jew comes from Yehudi, and those are the members of the Bnei Yisrael from Malchus Yehuda. And of course, the Navi describes the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash in a number of places. in Yirmiyahu, in Malachim Beis. In Malachim Beis, Perach Chaf Hei, the Navi actually describes how the last king being Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, how the Nebuchadnezzar, under his reign, they lay siege against the against Yerushalayim, the city of Yerushalayim, in the month of Teves, and that's why we fast on Aseres B'Teves, and they lay siege for about a year and a half until in the ninth of the month of Tammuz. So then the city is breached, and the city is finally conquered. The Beis Hamikdash is burnt. In Malachim Beis, in Pasuk Ches of Perachav Hei, the Navi actually says that the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, or is on the Bachodesh Hachamishi B'Shiva Lachodesh, on the seventh day of the month of Av. As we know, of course, we commemorate the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash on the ninth day of Av, and yet it seems that this took place on the seventh day of Av, and the Gemara and Tanis tries to reconcile different. One another pasuk elsewhere says that it took place on the tenth of Av, and therefore the Chazal say that they entered into the Beis Hamikdash on the seventh of Av, and was finally burnt on the ninth, and a little bit on the tenth of Av. In any case, additionally, in Sefer Yirmiyahu Perek Nun Beis, Psukim Chav Ches Talamid, so there the Navi describes different exiles, where Jews were exiled from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. So about 11 years before the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash, the aristocracy of Malchei Yehuda were exiled to Bavel, and among those was Yecheskel, the prophet. This took place during the seventh year of Nebuchadrezzar's reign. And there we find 3,023 Jews were exiled to Babel then. About 11 years later, when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, 832 Jews were exiled. And then years later, we find another exile of about 745, a total of 4,600 Jews exiled to Bavel, as recorded in Yirmiyahu Perek Nun Beis, Psukim Chav Ches Talam. But of course, Jews go elsewhere. Some are exiled to Bavel. Others escape to Egypt. Others move to Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey. And at this point in time, there is still after the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash, there's still a remnant of Jews who are living in Eretz Yisrael. And the Navi tells us that Nebuchadnezzar appoints Gedaliahu ben Achikam to be the governor. Now, he was a leader of a moderate faction that opposed the war. And so he was appointed governor of the remnant of Yehuda. And there were several cities, such as Givon, Mitzpeh, that's where Gedaliahu lived, and Beit El, that were not destroyed at all. And this is still very important, because even without a Beis Hamikdash, the rule in Eretz Yisrael is still important. There is still some Jewish autonomy. And the goal of Gedaliahu was to normalize life for the remnants of those who were still in Eretz Yisrael, even after the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. The Navi tells us Nebuchadnezzar left, or his chief executioner, Nebuzaradan, left some Jews to work in vineyards, to work in olive presses. And the leader, the governor, was going to be Gedaliahu, and Gedaliahu calls, lets people, Jews who are in hiding, say that Nebuchadnezzar allows them to come live and basically serve Nebuchadnezzar, but live peacefully in Eretz Yisrael. And the Navi tells us in Malachim Beis Perachav Hei Pasuk Chav Gimel that different individuals, Yishmael ben Netanya, Yochanan ben Kireach, Sroya ben Tanchumas, Hanetofasi, Yaaz Zan Yahu ben Hamachosi. So these were important figures who heard that Gedaliah was made governor, and they joined him. And Gedaliah tells him, don't be afraid, serve the king, and it'll be good for you. Now, as we know, as some of us know, we fast on Tzom Gedaliah, because Gedaliah was killed. In Malachim Beis, there is not a long discussion of what happened. It just tells us that on the seventh month, Yishmael ben Netanya ben Elishama Mizera HaMalucha. So this Yishmael, he was from the, I guess, royal blood, and 10 men who were with him, Asara Nashim Ito, killed Gedaliahu and a group of Jews and a garrison of Babylonians who were with him in Mitzpah. In Sefer Yirmiyahu, Perek Mem, the Navi describes it, the event with much greater detail. There the Navi tells us that Yochanan ben Kireach told Gedaliahu that Hayadoa teda ki balis melech b'nei Amon shalach et Yishmael ben Netanya lakoscha nafesh. Don't you know that Balis, the king of Amon, sent Yishmael to kill you? But Gedaliahu did not believe Yochanan's accusation. And he didn't think that Yishmael was trying to kill him. And indeed, in fact, Yochanan b'Kireach said, listen, let me kill Elchana v'akez Yishmael ben Netanya v'ish lo yeda. Let me kill Yishmael quietly, and there'll be plausible deniability. You can just say, I never heard about it. I want to protect you, Gedaliahu. He says, lo v'yakeka nefesh v'nafutu kol Yehuda hanik batzim elecha. Why should you be killed? And why should all of Judea scatter because you're not going to pay attention to the fact that Yishmael wants to kill you? But we find Gedaliel tells Yochanan ben Kireach, don't do anything, you are telling lies. Of course, in the very next parak, in Yirmiyahu parak Mem Aleph, again, the Navi tells us on the Chodesh Hashvi, in the seventh month, this was wrote, the Mefarshim understand that it was on Rosh Hashanah, that indeed Yishmael ben Netanya and 10 of his men came to visit Gedaliahu for the holiday, for Rosh Hashanah, and he killed Gedaliahu, and he kills the people who were with him. And eventually what happens is, and it's not so clear exactly, number one, why, what were Yishmael's motivations? The Navi tells us he is Mizera HaMalucha, he is of royal stock. Maybe he schemes to restore an independent and sovereign Davidic monarchy. Maybe he is jealous that he was not appointed governor. Maybe he views Gedaliahu as a collaborator. After all, he was a moderate. And maybe he was simply appointed by King Balis from Amon. And again, this takes place on Rosh Hashanah. And on the 3rd of Tishrei, we now commemorate the loss of autonomy in Judea. We commemorate the destruction of the first base of Migdash on the 9th of Av, and we commemorate the loss of autonomy in Judea, which we still had after the Churban with Gedaliah. So we commemorate that loss on the 3rd of Tishrei. It's not exactly clear how long Gedaliahu ruled. Did he rule for only a few months? Did he rule for a number of years? It's not so clear. But this, at this point, autonomy in Judea ended because people fled at this point to Egypt when the Babylonians heard what happened, so everyone was scared, and Jewish people lost all of their autonomy. Now, originally, after the northern kingdom was conquered, as I mentioned, most Jews live in the kingdom of Malchut Yehuda. Now they are living in exile in Egypt. Among them, Yirmiyahu HaNavi is living in Egypt. Some of them are living in Bavel. Among them, the prophet, the Navi Yechezkel, and some are living in Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey. Now, the Babylonian exile was different than the exile from Ashur, when the Jews of the north were exiled 140 years before. There was no policy of two-way enforced exchange of population. Rather, there was unidirectional departure to Bavel. Jews just were exiled to Bavel. And there were no new inhabitants to remain in Judea, perhaps to lay waste, to serve as a buffer between Bavel and Egypt. And therefore, when Jews returned to build the second base of Migdash, there was not much opposition of the returnees to return to their homes, because no one was living there in the meantime, as opposed to the north, where you had these non-Jews who may have converted, who are now living in the northern part of Eretz Yisrael. Now, the prophets, the Nevi'im, Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel, were warning about the Chorban before the Chorban. They're warning about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash before it was destroyed. And they said, don't listen to the false prophets who are saying that nothing's going to happen. They said, if you don't mend your ways, then the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed. But now, after the destruction, they clarified that this doesn't mean that God has left you. They said that the destruction and the exile resulted from moral and religious sin, and God is still with us even in exile. The Jews in Bavel mourned over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, and they gathered together at times during Shabbos and the holidays to remember the times of the Beis HaMikdash, and fasts were also instituted to remember the Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, in Zechariah, Parakhes, Psukim Yudches and Yutes, we find how the Jews in the beginning of the Second Temple period, they are asking the Navi if we should continue to fast during the Tzom HaRavi, Tzom HaChamishi, Tzom HaShvi, Tzom HaSiri. Should we continue to fast during the fast of the fourth month, which is Shivasar B'Tammuz, maybe the ninth of Tammuz? Again, what's clear is that on the 17th of Tammuz, the walls of Yerushalayim were broken into in destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, and there are conflicting sources as to what happened in the first Beis HaMikdash. Was it the 9th of Tammuz? Was it the 17th of Tammuz? But there was a fast on the month of Tammuz. There was a fast on the 5th month, the month of Av, Tisha B'Av, the fast of Tzum Gedalia, and also the fast of the Asiri, the 10th month, which was the fast of Teves. So the Jewish people are fasting. And it was the celebrations of Shabbos, celebration of the holidays that kept the Jews unified with a strong religious connection to Torah. And some of the names of the Jews reflected holidays and Shabbos. Some Jews are named Chagai. One of the Nevi'im was called Chagai. And there were Jews who were named Shabtai. There was also, though, Babylonian influence. So, for example, the names of the months of the year are now Babylonian. Originally, the months of the year are the first in the Torah. We refer to the months of the year in the Torah as the first month. What we call Nisan is the first month, and what we call Iyar is the second month, and what we call Tishrei is the seventh month. So there were just month numbers. There were no names of the months, and there are very few names of Hebrew months during the times of the first Beis HaMikdash. But now, when the Jews return to Eretz Yisrael from Galus Bavel, from the Babylonian exile, to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash, now the months have Babylonian names. They're called Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Tevet, Shvat, Adar. These are all Babylonian names. The Ramban in Shmos, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis, explains that originally they didn't have these names. Originally, when you called a month the first month, you are the minyan is zecher letzias Mitzrayim. Why is it the first month? Because this is the month when we left Egypt. So we think about the geula, the redemption from Egypt. However, says the Ramban, kasher alinu mi Bavel, once we went up from Bavel, v'niskai masha mara kasuv, and we fulfilled that which the pasuk said in Yirmiyahu. That we're not going to say only or anymore that Hashem brought us out of Egypt, but He brought us out from the northern land. So now we're going chazar likra chadashim b'shem shenikran b'eretz Bavel, that we mention the names that they were called, the months were called in Bavel. Lahazkir Kisham Amanu Umisham Elenu Akadosh Hashem Yisparach. That we say these months, what are we saying? That we used to be in Bavel, and Akadosh Baruch Hu brought us out from Bavel to build the second Beis HaMikdash. And that's why in the Torah we refer to these months as the first month, the second month, the third month, and the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. We also refer to these months with these names, but once we leave Golus Bavel, Kadosh Baruch Hu, miraculously has Koresh, as we will see in the next class, make the declaration that we're allowed to return to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So now we recite these months in their Babylonian names to remind us of the kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to taking us out of Galus Bavel to help rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash, which we will describe, God willing, in our next session.